Welcome to The Daily Decrypt, the go-to podcast for all things cybersecurity. Get ready to decrypt the complexities of cyber safety and stay informed. In today's bonus episode, we will be discussing hijacking attacks and vulnerabilities within the Linklocal Multicast Name Resolution Protocol. Here is your host, Offset Keys.
So recently I just finished the GCIH course at SANS, pursuing my master's there right now, and it was honestly pretty transformative of a course. You know, before going into the course, I really didn't want to do much pen testing or capture the flag style stuff. I was pretty set on being a defender and working on becoming a security automations engineer. I was pretty set on that. But let me tell you, after taking this course, it was transformative. I am so blown away by attacker techniques. And, you know, I knew a lot was possible, but being able to see it firsthand was, very eye-opening. So I wanted to do a little review of that class as a whole, but I wanted to make it applicable. So I figured I would just dive into some parts of the class that were really applicable to both attackers and defenders, and maybe parts that I didn't get super great practice with during the course. And so this is an opportunity for me to learn a little bit better the things that I may have missed. So one of those was the responder tool. And to be honest, I didn't give it a second thought. It was one of the easiest labs in the whole course because you literally just fire up responder and wait for someone to attempt to access a resource that doesn't exist, you know? So a pen tester will gain access to a local area network. And one of the first things they'll do is just fire up a listener, a responder listener, and maybe leave it on for days at a time. And when they come back and check it, maybe they'll have a password hash, or not a password hash, but an NTLM hash that was built using the user's password. And then they'll throw it into John the Ripper using a basic long dictionary attack. You know, it's those passive recon things that end up making pen tests so successful. So I guess, you know, let's dive into it a little bit. What is LLMNR? Well, it stands for Link Local Multicast Name Resolution, and it's used in Windows environments as a backup to DNS, and it's enabled by default. Okay, so, you know, if it's not your fault if you have it enabled, because it's enabled by default. So, you know, everyone knows what DNS is. DNS is domain name resolution. So it's, you know, if a host says, hey, like, what IP belongs to this host name? You know, the DNS server will return the IP that belongs to that host name. So if a host asks for a host name that the DNS server hasn't heard of, doesn't have a record of, a Windows host by default will send a query to the broadcast IP on whatever network the host is on. So every network usually has a reserved IP address called the broadcast IP that does what it says. It broadcasts messages to every IP in that network. So that's cool. So the host reaches out to the broadcast IP and says, hey, do you know who this host is? Does anyone on this network know who this host is? Right? And so the goal is for the host, if they're on that network, to reply and say, hey, that's me. Yeah, we're good. You found me. Cool. And then they authenticate and they share the resources they were intending to share and go about their daily lives, happy as clams. But this is one of those user experience features, convenience features that directly contradicts the security. We don't want the opportunity for any machine to talk to us. You know, we want to segment that off. We want to implement zero trust. And this not only doesn't implement zero trust, it fully enables trust, that we trust every machine on our network. All right, so that's a high level of how LLMNR works and when it would be used. So the hijacking attack is essentially just, once an attacker has a foothold in a local network, they can respond to those LLMNR requests with whatever they want. You know, basically they just acknowledge, they're like, that's me. I'm that person. Please authenticate to me. And then the host reaching out just sends them their NTLM hash that was built using their password. So that's how they authenticate to that server. And now the attacker using Responder has that hash. All right. So what Responder does is essentially just listens for any of these LLMNR requests and responds with whatever host name it's requesting. It doesn't have a specific host name. It's just if the host requests a server, Responder will respond and poison that request, get the NTLM hash, and the host requesting it has no idea. It just says, oop, you made a typo, try again. And they go, oh, my bad. And they move about their day. Like, it's really hard to detect. So yeah, I have a little analogy for this type of attack, an LLMNR poisoning attack. You know, so say I have a cat. So say I'm going out of town, you know, which I am next week, and I go on Yelp and I find a pet sitter. You know, I've never met this pet sitter, but they have great reviews on Yelp, you know, and so we've been discussing for a while and we decided to meet up at a bar to discuss pet care and to exchange, like, I'll give them a key to my house or like a code to my gate or however I, you know, want them to take care of my pet. And so I go to the bar. It's time to meet up. I go to the bar. This person's name is Chris, and that's all I know about them. And so I go to the bartender, and I say, hey, do you know if there's a Chris here? Do you know a Chris? And the bartender, like, looks around and doesn't. It's like, oh, I have no idea who Chris is. So you proceed to stand on the bar and yell, hey, is anyone here Chris? Like, you don't know what this person looks like, so you're just going to start asking everybody if anyone's Chris. And an attacker seizes this opportunity and says, I'm Chris. You know, and you say, oh, great, thank gosh. You know, I'm actually in a hurry. Here's the instructions. Here's my key. Thanks so much. And you walk away. And now this person who's not Chris now has the keys to your house. Okay. So yeah, in that analogy, the bartender's a DNS server. All right. And they were completely useless. Maybe they weren't even there. You know, like sometimes there's no DNS servers, whatever. The keys to your house are your password, your password hash, your NTLM hash. I mean, maybe the attacker doesn't know your address. Maybe they just have the keys and now they have to go figure out the address. I guess that would be a nice addition to the analogy. But yeah, I think that pretty much describes how the attack works at a high level, right? But now we have the problem moving back into actual terminology. We have the issue of how do we get users to authenticate to an unknown server, right? As an attacker, we can turn it on and listen and hope, you know, but maybe we want to take a more aggressive approach. So how do we do that? There are plenty of vulnerabilities. There are a few in Microsoft Outlook that can help you accomplish this. Basically, all you have to do is trick the user into authenticating to searching for another server, right? So say in your Outlook email, you include an image link that in the link uses an absolute path to an unknown server. Once that link is activated, Responder picks up the attempt to authenticate to this unknown server to get that image. And the user doesn't even notice. They're just like, that image won't load. Okay. There are a couple more specific attacks with specific vulnerabilities that don't require the user to respond, which are pretty crazy. So in Outlook, you can send an email and you can include a reminder for the recipient of the email. And the reminder can include a sound. And that sound file can be what's called a UNC or Universal Naming Convention path. So it can be anything you want it to be. And so you can specify this sound file as something that lives on a server that maybe you control or maybe that just doesn't exist. And so when that email is opened or that reminder goes off, say you set it for every 5 minutes, then the sound file will attempt to be accessed and LLMNR will be activated and Responder will pick up the hash. So in a similar vein, there's another one. You can set calendar invites with reminders, etc. But then there's, you know, internal chat communication application called Spark, real-time Spark, where you can embed images in a chat. So all you have to do is send a message to a user that has the image source tag that uses, again, you know, the path name to a server. So that's pretty crazy, right? You know, these vulnerabilities aren't present everywhere, but if you're in the network, you're going to look for these, you're going to try these, and you'll be successful. So how do we prevent this type of attack? All right, there's many ways for organizations to prevent this type of attack. They can ensure their DNS server is configured correctly and that each network has access to that DNS server, right? That's step number one. That's your best bet. And once that's configured correctly, you can disable LLMNR entirely, so there is no fallback. That does increase the risk that something won't be able to resolve correctly, but every time something doesn't work is an opportunity to improve. So that's the best bet. Making sure you have good segmented network practices like VLANs and stuff like that just will help drastically reduce or prevent peer-to-peer communications. We need peer-to-peer communications to function in most office workplaces, but maybe there's a segment that doesn't need that, and we can turn on guest network policies, and we don't need to even allow the switches to let devices communicate to each other. Because since this does have to go through the switch, because LLMNR reaches out to the broadcast IP, so it is a network thing, you know. There's plenty of protocols, especially with Apple devices like AirDrop, that use a combination of just Wi-Fi protocols and Bluetooth and stuff like that, that don't require communicating through a switch, but this does require communicating through a switch, so we have a little more control there, all right? And finally, the theme for any cybersecurity professional that they harp on more than anything is strong passwords. So if you remember, when they authenticate, the worst thing that can happen is the attacker can get a NTLM hash. And now that hash is not a direct hash of the password per se, but the hash is built using the password, which is good enough to launch any sort of cracking attack. Anytime the password is used, whether or not the hash represents the password itself, you can use John the Ripper to crack it. But if you use a unique password with greater than 20 characters, preferably generated by a password manager, so that it is completely unique, you know, it's not found on the dark web anywhere, it's not in any dictionaries, then you will beat this type of attack. You can use exclusively LLMNR. They can get hashes. It actually might slow the attacker down if you use exclusively LLMNR, but everyone has an organizationally enforced strong password. Hey, there you go. There's a free idea. Maybe that'll slow down the attacker. They'll be trying to crack all these hashes. It'll consume all their resources. They'll give up. They're not able to. The end, you know, but that carries some risk as well. One of my current obsessions is the use of deception used to detect intrusion. So intrusion detect honeypots, stuff like that. So say you have what's called a decoy account set up, and you have an alert for any time this account logs in. So it's a break glass account. It should never be logging in anywhere. All right, you set this account up so that its name is admin, administrator, something appealing to these attackers, and you give it a crackable password. All right, so now we set up a script in our environment to try to connect to unknown services using LLMNR every 5 minutes. Maybe it's a random interval. And if responder picks that up, they're going to be sent the username admin for your decoy account and the password hash. They're not sent the password, they're sent the password hash. They're able to crack this password. They have admin credentials. The account is active because it's continually attacked, you know, trying to reach out to resources. And they're going to attempt to log in and probably succeed. So there's your detection, all right? You want to make sure that this account doesn't have a lot of access, that there can't be anything malicious in it. You also really want to test this account. Make sure your alerts are working by configuring a login every day. So it successfully logs in every day at the same exact time. And if that doesn't happen, it triggers an alert in your system, okay? So that's a fun one as well. Those are the best ways to prevent this type of attack. Otherwise, you can write detection rules for any of the vulnerabilities specifically, but there's not much you can do to detect this activity unless they, you know, follow behavior patterns or signatures that are indicative of an attack. So in the show notes, I'll include some links to maybe some Sigma rules that I've found on the internet that can help with these specific vulnerabilities. There's also a great book called Intrusion Detection Honeypots by Chris Sanders, and he has a GitHub link that I will also put in the show notes that includes a script that will do exactly what we've been discussing. It will try to authenticate using LLMNR. That's pretty much at a high level how that attack works. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I really enjoyed learning a little bit more about this topic, and I just think it can be very beneficial to just get a little refresher on this type of thing on your way to work. It can be inspiring. Maybe you weren't thinking about this type of attack or how easy it was, and maybe you want to, you know, look into it a little more. Maybe this inspiration carries on into other areas of your life as it does mine. I hope you enjoyed it, and thanks for listening.